Hello and welcome to the Pals Anime Lounge, a podcast where a bunch of pals get together to talk about anime. I'm host Ace, and joining me are Artura.
Everyone.
And Gozugos.
Yamero Takeshi!
In today's episode, we are talking about Cyberpunk Edgerunners, a series that's just been released in September 2022. Since this is based on a video game, we've decided to cover it using the three-episode rule like we did during season one of this very podcast, rather than cover an OVA, because why not?
It's also newer, so it's a little better. I mean, what? No.
It was produced by Studio Trigger, the studio behind Kill la Kill and Little Witch Academia, and it's 10 episodes long. Cyberpunk Edgerunners, when I looked, had a My Anime List score of 8.69. Since it's just come out, that's liable to change.
8.69, nice.
By the time I finish the sentence. This is based on Cyberpunk 2077, developed by CD Projekt Red. It was itself based on a tabletop RPG, but this anime wouldn't exist without the game, so it counts. Cyberpunk 2077... released to very mixed scores due to it being severely broken and the last-gen version being very badly downgraded despite the developer saying it wouldn't be.
Wait, don't tell me. It was made by Bethesda.
I already said CD Projekt Red.
Did you just say Bethesda?
Yes.
My synopsis for Cyberpunk Edgerunners is... when a teenager loses his mother to an accident, he decides to change the way his life was going by using stolen tech. Arturo?
David Martinez's mother passes away. He fits himself with a military-grade tech that he found in his mother's belonging, which ultimately leads to him meeting a group of cyberpunks.
And goes.
Oh, I went a little bit different this time.
Oh, no.
Japanese animation studio Trigger butchers the cyberpunk IP with this horrible adaptation by replacing clunky storytelling, crappy split-body animation, ragdolling and random T-posing with relatable stories, sympathetic characters, visceral creative visuals, and great action. How dare they?
Well, we know what he's going to score at the end.
Thumbs down. Okay, well, with the OVAs and movies, I usually go quite in-depth with the story, but since this has just come out and it's available on Netflix streaming rather than hard-to-find DVDs or third-party sources, let's say.
In the dark corners of the internet.
So I'll be more vague, because you should always check out these things yourself and just listen to these podcasts as a bit of flavor text to add to the experience. But anyway, Edgerunners starts with the main character, David Martinez, whichever way around nicknames are supposed to go. He's referred to as D almost exclusively, except when his mum's calling him Miho, which confused me for a second because I thought that was his name.
Thankfully, that's actually something that you say in Spanish. It's kind of like my son. It's just a short way to say mi hija or mi hijo. So I found that really interesting, especially because the character's Spanish roots in his name.
I was really glad that they didn't overdo it with the Spanish, because I noticed in recent media that they like to... whenever a character is Hispanic, they will use Spanish every second word, and I'm super confused and super annoyed.
Yeah,
that was actually why Jackie didn't win best character in the Grincast game of the year.
That's fucking bullshit because
Artura brought up the fact that he's kind of stereotypical.
Sorry, okay.
Just speak fucking English. Everyone else is doing it. Do you hear the Japanese guy speak Japanese every second word?
No, the Japanese guys just speak Japanese in this. But we'll get to that.
It's really difficult. I just a little off topic for a second. When they do these sort of things, it's not easy. I've tried it on purpose. I'm like, but how did they manage it? It's impossible. I can't just randomly be talking and then just say a Spanish word. It's not feasible. Anyway, sorry, rant over. Continue.
Well, D is watching brain dances at the start, and this guy is just murdering loads of people. Turns out it's a brain dance, so it is something that actually happened, and it happened literally like the night before. And then it gives us our first unexpected nudity 4 minutes in after the hyperviolence.
This isn't even unexpected nudity at this point. It's just unexpected porn.
To be fair, after this happened, I was waiting for it to happen again, and it does. He goes to school. His tech has been badly upgraded, let's say, and it screws up the school systems, so his mum has to go and collect him and offers to pay the school for the repairs, even though they can't afford it. On the way home, there is a car crash, and the mum is badly injured. She's a member of Trauma Team, but it seems that she isn't a member of Trauma Team because they don't help her when they arrive. They just help the guy who has a subscription, which is what we know happens in the game. When Dee gets home after visiting the normal hospital, quote-unquote hospital, he discovers some military tech in his mum's things. While he's working out how to afford medical care and rent. But the Ripper Doc that he's quote-unquote friends with, they're friendly in the...
Kind of like your friendship with mine. You abuse me and I just take it.
Well, he sells brain dances at school for this doc, and the doc does him the occasional favour. But the Ripper Doc lowballs him when Dee tries to sell him the military tech. And the next day... on the way to school, some guys are giving Dee a hard time for apparently no reason. The guy says, "I don't dislike the poor." And then Dee says, "I don't understand what you're saying." So he says, "Well, that's why I hate you." And he beats him up, which kind of looks like he hates the poor.
He's just giving mixed signals.
He's basically like a stereotypical or a rather a typical gamer. He hates things, but he's not sure why.
Almost immediately after being beaten up, Dee's mum dies. That kind of puts Dee in more financial difficulty because he's got to afford to dispose of the body, and which he gets her ashes, and then he has to break into his apartment. The landlord calls and says that if he doesn't pay, he's not just going to change the locks, he's going to throw them out on the street. Which is different. How?
Oh, I think he meant physically.
He's going to throw them. That's how I thought about it too. It's like, I'll throw you into the street by like beating you up or something like that.
Oh, right. That's fair. The first episode ends with David telling the Ripper Doc to install the military tech on him. It's a spine. We don't know exactly what it does, just that it belonged to the guy at the start from the brain dance, and it enhanced his abilities and made him quite murdery. The second episode begins immediately where the first left off, with the Ripper Doc agreeing to install it. But as soon as Dee comes back crying, the Doc is going to get to keep the tech. That's the agreement.
So what happens if he doesn't appear crying?
Because the doc doesn't think that he's going to be able to run it, basically. He goes to school and beats up the bully and gets expelled. And then while bumming around town, he spots someone stealing chips from people on the train. Her name is Lucy, and when she tries to steal from him, he's military tech. I keep calling it that. I've written military tech, but I keep saying military tech. I don't know why.
Millimeter tech.
Her name is Lucy, and when she steals from him his Militech implant, lets him catch her, and he decides to join her in stealing from Corpos. The only reason she tried to steal from him was because he had a Arasaka Academy ID, even though he'd just been, you know, kicked out. They go around the train, or multiple trains perhaps, and steal chips, not entirely certain what the chips do. That's not explained in the anime so far, at least. But they pop out of people's necks and he grabs them. And then he collapses They wind up at the Ripper Dock because he's not had any immunoblockers and didn't seem to know what immunoblockers were.
That's one thing that I was kind of shocked by, because, you know, you'd think this would be something that's more common knowledge, even if you don't have tech yourself, because it's become so normal. It's kind of like, I guess, medicine nowadays as well.
It does have some implants, but clearly this is this requires immunoblockers, which it turns out the doc didn't tell him about because, why bother?
Because he wanted the Militech for free.
Yeah.
Because the doc was in a hurry to go back to watching porn.
Yeah. That was where the second unexpected nudity came in.
Never get operated by a horny doctor.
Let him finish first.
Let him finish so he finishes.
They go back to Lucy's and play video games, and the episode ends with someone arriving at Lucy's to take back his Militech implant, while Lucy casually smokes. The third episode starts with the gang of cyberpunks revealing that Dee's mum was their supplier, and they paid her for the implant. That's why the guy was under the impression it was his. But Dee explains who he is and what happened to his mum, and that calms down the big guy. Which, honestly, I was surprised by. I thought, well, I didn't expect that to happen. I thought there'd be more beating involved.
Honestly, me too. I was really shocked at how quickly he just dropped it. He was like, oh, I owe it to your mother. I was like, wow, really? Like, it was a nice surprise, to be honest with you.
Definitely. They eventually agree to let him work off his debt, because they can't take the implant out without it costing more than the implant was worth. The next day, they have a plan to steal some nav data, and things go wrong, because, of course, resulting in a great car chase scene and the aforementioned Japanese characters. Two Japanese men on motorcycles just yelling random unsubtitled Japanese at them.
Wait, they were unsubtitled Japanese on in the English version?
Well, I had the subtitle. I didn't have the subtitles on, and it was just random. Well, I'm sure it means something in Japanese, but until towards the end of the last couple of things that the guy says is subtitled, it's hard subtitled.
In closed captions, in English closed captions, they subtitle all of the Japanese.
Yeah, they do.
Oh, I didn't have those on. Which is rare, but I don't have an excuse for why I didn't turn them on. I just didn't turn them on.
You just didn't feel like it. And you're a cyberpunk, you do whatever the hell you want.
Dee and Lucy, who were in the car, they arrive at the rendezvous, and Dee's welcomed to the team after someone gets exploded. One of the Japanese guys. They have a party to celebrate, and some guy with four eyes and voiced by Giancarlo Esposito arrives. I instantly smiled when I heard his voice.
He's three on one side.
Yeah, it's 3 eyes on one side, 1 eye on the other side. It's an interesting look.
It really wasn't. It was so unique. I actually really appreciated that.
I also noticed that the single eye on the left side is drawn differently to the others. So it looks like all three of the others are cybernetic, but the one on the left is a flesh and blood.
It was a really nice attention to detail, because you can tell the difference. And also, of course, the different size, because the three eyes are, well, smaller, not by a significant margin, but they're definitely smaller enough. And it's a nice kind of like attention to detail to show you what it's supposed to. Like, of course, it's a tank. No one's going to have four eyes, but still.
It was also great to hear Giancarlo Esposito. He is fantastic. I'm a fan. He complains about how the job went because they stole the car rather than just the data. And it turns out that he's the fixer who told the cyberpunks to do the job. Whereas we'd been led to believe that the big guy was the boss. But no, he's just the boss of the gang and took the job from the fixer. The episode ends with Dee cutting ties with the school, even though they'd just offered him a full scholarship as a ploy to... There's something shady going on with that tech. But that's for later episodes, because... As I said, that was the end of the third episode.
Mm-hmm.
So, was this a good adaptation, you guys?
Honestly, I think so. I mean, apart from the missing bugs, the missing, you know, just issues overall. I feel like it's a nice introduction to the world. Despite not having played a lot of it, I did research extensively Cyberpunk for the Game of the Year podcast. And like, I see the similarities of the world and all of that. There haven't been shootouts, of course. Then mostly they use kind of like their tech in a, I guess you would say almost like a melee-based way rather than in other ways that I saw the game works. But I think it's a good adaptation. I feel like it's also a pretty good introduction to what the world is.
And goes.
Maybe. I mean, to me, it felt like it didn't need to have the Cyberpunk name attached. Like, it just could have been completely different IP. I guess it's a bit because Cyberpunk 2077 is so generic cyberpunk, there isn't anything that stands out to me. Like, recently I played The Ascent, which is a top-down cyberpunk shooter, and it just feels the same. Like, they use the same kind of, like, they use the term chrome, some other terms, I can't remember off the top of my head, but it just felt like the same world, just different place, maybe.
I do see where you're coming from, but isn't that just that's kind of a problem with almost every cyberpunk genre, is what I've personally found myself.
I mean, if I look at Cyberpunk 2077, the game, The Ascent, and the anime, I feel the anime stands out because it's so creative visually. Like, I would say that could be a different IP. It just seems different. Like, it's visuals, the kind of stuff that they show, like the how visceral the visuals are. It just has a different style to the cyberpunk game.
Honestly, I thought they did a pretty good job, because the apartment building where he lives looks like the apartment building where V first lives, because you can buy other apartments. Some of the streets looked familiar, having been around the map a couple of times in Cyberpunk 2077. Yeah, I honestly liked it. They used the same sound effects. When people get phone calls, they hear the other person and it comes up as text on the screen, which you have to do for a video game, but it's nice that they included it in the anime as well.
It's kind of like a nice nod to the game.
To me, it just made sense. It's like you would have a smartphone in your head, basically.
Yeah.
So my next question is, based on the first three episodes, is it a Yata, Nani, or Baka?
Okay, well, I'm going to assume that Yata is the positive score.
Is it a thumbs up, a thumbs down, or a meh?
No, it's a Yata.
Yes, it's definitely a Yata.
I also give it a Yata. So I just randomly thought that while I was driving the other day. I thought, oh, I'll spring it on them and see what the reaction is.
I was really confused, but I'm taking it.
You're like a regular Japanese person.
Oh, I know, that means that I live in a very small place.
I think this is one of the only things we've all, like, mutually given a confident yata to.
Yeah, I think in the past we have all agreed on a thumbs up, but it's not always been a confident thumbs up.
Yeah, like, it feels... I feel really confident about this one because it's good. I mean, one thing I've noticed is that Netflix makes good anime, and this one was no different. I definitely continue watching it. The only thing is that my wife is really squeamish with very bloody and gory things.
People get exploded.
Yeah, but it's that it's worse when it's with eyeballs. And that's one thing that happened with Castlevania. They had a flying eyeball, and that's when we just had to quit, because she's like eyeball phobic at this point. But if we play the game and she enjoys it enough, I'm pretty sure we're going to end up watching it, because it's actually pretty good as standalone, let alone knowing the world and having resided in it, I can only assume.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to keep watching it.
Yeah, same. I mean, it has the studio attached is, I think everything they've done and even the people who worked on this before they formed Studio Trigger, the stuff that they worked before that was great. So the director, Imaishi, is a legend at this point. Like, he directed this, the Cyberpunk anime. So, yeah, I knew it was going to be good. Like, the pacing is great. Like, the story moves forward all the time, feels like.
Yeah, I was a bit worried when, like, it just shows him walking to school and getting the bus, and but that never felt boring.
No, and it's afterwards when everything happened and they showed essentially the same scene, but it changed. I understood why there was so much attention to just him going to school. Yeah. Like, it doesn't feel like that was there just because, and nothing in the anime feels like it's there just because. And I think that's one of the major things that makes something good.
Right, well, final question. Does this deserve its My Anime List score, which again was 8.69?
Honestly, yes. Specifically the 0.69. I think 8.69 is pretty good. I probably wouldn't go much higher, but that's at this moment in time, because one thing to keep in mind is that we actually haven't seen the conclusion, which tends to be the make or break for a lot of these things as well.
Yeah, that's true. Goes?
I could go for like 9.69. To be honest, I've like no complaints so far, like zero. Like I would have to find some like very personal stuff that I didn't like, and I didn't so far. I'd have to rewatch it to find some nitpicks.
I think the score or higher, yeah. It really doesn't deserve lower.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't deserve lower. I can definitely agree with that.
Right, well, that brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you for joining me, Arthur and Gozgoz.
Thank you so much for having us. Arigato gozaimasu. I'm taking a book from Gorse.
Shit. Holy shit. Super fun time.
Thank you for listening to the Pals Anime Lounge, and Betty, thank you for subscribing wherever you found this episode. You can find more from us on GameGrin.com, find us on social media, or listen to the Grincast podcast. And until next time, game on.